We're back in the book of Esther this morning, and if you find Psalms in the Old Testament, go to the left past Job. You'll find the little book of Esther, page 412 in the seatback Bibles, Esther chapter 4. Last Sunday, we began to look at the book of Esther, which is surprising and strange and amazingly relevant. As this book opens, some Jews are living in Persia, Iran, at the time of the captivity. This all takes place about 500 years before the time of Jesus Christ. The king of the empire, his name is Ahasuerus, or Xerxes, deposed and divorced his wife Vashti because, well, she was too bold. So he set up a contest to find the most beautiful, seductive woman in the kingdom to be his new wife. And he found Esther, a gorgeous young Jewish girl, and she was pleasing to him. Esther hid her Jewish identity, and she was pleasing because not only was she gorgeous, but she was far more compliant than Vashti. So Xerxes made Esther queen. There's something in this book to offend just about everyone. The feminists are offended by Esther because of her subservience, because of her submission. The feminists like Vashti a lot more than Esther. Religious people are offended because Esther joins the harem, and Esther spends one night with the king before they were married. At the beginning of Esther, Esther is definitely not a role model. So come to chapter 3, and a big problem comes up. There is an anti-Semitic plot to get the king to kill all the Jews in the kingdom. Not just in Susa, but all the way to Palestine. And we'll actually come back to that plot and the guy behind it next Sunday. There are international repercussions of what's taking place in Susa. Chapter 4, Esther is inside the palace. She's inside the place that is the height of world power. But now we've got this question. When you're living in such morally and socially and spiritually ambiguous situations as this, does God still work with us? When I'm out here in a culture, in a place, in a job, in a circumstance that is spiritually, just really messy. Does God still work with me there? Can God still work with us no matter where we are in a culture that seems to believe almost anything, seems to believe almost nothing? The answer of this book is yes. God can and does still work with us. That's where we pick up the story. Esther chapter 4, and I'm going to start at verse 4. When Esther's young women and her eunuchs came and told her, the queen was deeply distressed. She sent garments to clothe Mordecai so that he might take off his sackcloth, but he would not accept them. Then Esther called for Hathach, one of the king's eunuchs who had been appointed to attend her, and ordered him to go to Mordecai and learn what this was and why it was. Hathach went out to Mordecai in the open square of the city in front of the king's gate. And Mordecai told him all that had happened to him and the exact sum of money that Haman had promised to pay into the king's treasuries for the destruction of the Jews. Mordecai also gave him a copy of the written decree issued in Susa for their destruction, that he might show it to Esther and explain it to her and command her to go to the king to beg his favor and plead with him on behalf of her people. And Hathach went and told Esther what Mordecai had said. Then Esther spoke to Hathach and commanded him to go to Mordecai and say, "All the king's servants and the people of the king's provinces know that if any man or woman goes to the king inside the inner court without being called, there is but one law, to be put to death, except the one to whom the king holds out the golden scepter so that he might live. But as for me, I have not been called to come into the king these 30 days. And they told Mordecai what Esther had said. Then Mordecai told them to reply to Esther, "Do not think to yourself that in the king's palace you will escape any more than all the other Jews. For if you keep silent at this time, relief and deliverance will rise for the Jews from another place, but you and your father's house will perish. And who knows whether you have not come to the kingdom for such a time as this?" Then Esther told them to reply to Mordecai, "Go gather all the Jews to be found in Susa and hold a fast on my behalf, and do not eat or drink for 3 days, night or day. I and my young women will also fast as you do. Then I will go to the king, though it is against the law. And if I perish, I perish." Mordecai then went away and did everything as Esther had ordered him. This is God's word. Let's see four things here about insiders, people who live on the inside. God uses people on the inside. Living on the inside is high risk. God put you on the inside for a reason, and then we'll ask how people on the inside become truly great. Number one, God uses people on the inside. As chapter 4 begins, Mordecai, Esther's guardian, is in sackcloth and ashes, the sign of mourning. You can pretty well get the image in your mind's eye. He's in the open square in front of the king's gate. Now, the gate here is not the door to the city, but it's the entrance to the giant, great palace complex. In Susa, the palace complex was on an Acropolis. It was on a big hill about 120 feet above the city, and it was a city inside a city. It's huge. And there in that Acropolis was the pinnacle of culture and power. And here's where power flows. This place inside the king's gate is where laws and ideas permeated the whole empire. It would be like if we took all the great government buildings of Washington, D.C., the White House and the Capitol and the Supreme Court building and those great buildings, and put them all on one big hill, all one big spot. That's this spot. That's where the power is. And that's where Esther is. Mordecai gets her attention by being in mourning. "You're there, Esther. We need you now. We're dying here. And you are our person on the inside." What's happening is that powerful forces are coming together inside the Persian Empire to destroy God's people, Israel. And they get to the king. They're going to destroy all the Jews, not just the Jews in Susa, but all the Jews in all the empire, which includes Palestine. The Jews are doomed on a set date. The neighbors of the Jew can kill them all. We're talking legal genocide. They can kill all the Jews and take all their stuff. Basically, they're paying for their lives with all their material possessions. So Mordecai comes to Esther to say, "You, Esther, are on the inside. Because of where you are, you, Esther, need to use your position. You need to use your influence. You have to use all your social and political capital to put a stop to this thing." Well, here's the first thing we learn, not only here, but also in the book of Genesis, in Joseph's story, in the book of Daniel. When God works in the world, he doesn't just use people who are in religious vocations, pastor, missionaries. He uses people who are in secular public callings. God doesn't just use preachers and missionaries, but he also uses people out there in the secular space, in jobs and callings that most people would not consider religious. We're talking about the majority of Christians. We're talking about the vast majority of people in this room. God uses for his purposes people both inside and outside the palace, so to speak, inside and outside of government. God uses people inside and outside of medicine, inside and outside the business world. Just because Jesus left his carpenter's bench and became a full-time evangelist, just because Peter left his nets to follow Jesus and Matthew left his tax collecting, does not mean that everyone is supposed to do so in order to be useful to God. I will follow, we just sang, I will follow you. Well, that doesn't necessarily mean that all of us are supposed to leave our jobs to go follow Jesus. Some of us, yes, but not all of us. God's goal is to redeem the whole world to himself, not just church buildings, not just college campuses, not just camps. He wants to redeem General Motors. He wants to redeem Sparrow Hospital. He wants to redeem the state of Michigan. It's all his, and it's all broken. Have you figured that out? You work at the state of Michigan, you know it's broken. You work at Sparrow Hospital, you know it's broken. Wherever it is you work, you know the system is broken. And it's broken because our relationship with God is broken. It doesn't just take preachers. It takes everybody. It takes farmers and grocers and nurses and teachers and bankers and mechanics and writers and engineers and clerks and managers and secretaries and medics and lawyers and tradespeople. Dick Lucas was writing about Joseph, but it's really the same principle. He could have been writing about Esther. If you were to go to a book table and see a biography with the title, The Man God Uses, or The Woman God Uses, you would immediately think it was the story of a missionary, or a minister, a specialist in some sort of spiritual work, a pastor, an evangelist, or someone who leads Bible studies at the least, would you not? In fact, what you have here in the story of Joseph or the story of Daniel or the story of Esther is a highly successful secular leader. He is not a preacher. He is not a missionary. He is not leading a Bible study group. And Dick says, in the long term, he thinks that being a preacher or a missionary or leading a Bible study group in many ways is easier. This is the preacher talking here. There's a certain spiritual glamour in doing that. What we do every day, it's easier. What I, as a pastor, do every day, in some senses, is actually easier because we discern what we should be doing. It's more black and white, it's not gray. It's often hard to see. It's often hard to get Christians to see that God is willing not just to greatly use men and women in ministry, but also in law and in medicine and in business and in the arts. God wants to use you where you are on the inside. Stop and think about it. God used Adam, and Adam worshiped God in the garden, not by reading the Bible, not by praying, not by staying away from a few bad apples. He worshiped God by doing the work God put him to in the garden. And it can't possibly be a coincidence that the majority of parables that Jesus told had a workplace context. And of the 40 miracles that took place in the book of Acts, 39 of them occurred outside of a church setting. It's obvious that the God of the Bible is as concerned with displaying his power inside the workplace, wherever God has put us, as insiders. So what do we do then when the culture is falling apart right in front of us? The whole culture is going to pot. I mean, read your newspaper. Do I need to be more explicit? You know exactly what I'm talking about. All around us, we see moral rot and decay. What do? Well, we can't all just escape. Some people tried that. They set up little camps in North Dakota, and all the holy, holy people come and live together in a camp in North. Well, that's not real. That's not biblical. We can't all just escape. We have to go and pursue ministry where God places us from the inside. We have to redeem the culture from the inside. Now, often the Christian response is to talk about morality and abortion and transsexuals and bathrooms, you know, and pontificate about bathrooms from the pulpit, but really, for those of you who are living and working in this stuff, you're living and working with people who are struggling with some of these issues. And it's your calling to go and model the gospel from the inside and speak the good news from the inside. It's interesting, isn't it? When you think about how God put together the Old Testament, you remember the history of the Old Testament? God created a nation with Abraham. They went to Egypt. They came back 400 years later. God made this nation. The kings and most of the kings became bad. Finally, God destroyed the northern nation of Israel, and then the kingdom of Judah later was carried off captivity into Babylon. And then after they were in Babylon for 70 years, they returned. We have three different people that God used mightily at roughly the same time to restore the nation. Three different people. Ezra was a Bible teacher. Nehemiah was an urban planner, or maybe you would call him a project manager. And Esther is a politician's wife. Isn't that interesting? She's up in the citadel. She's up in the courts. She is in a place that no preacher could ever get to. Esther has the ear of the king. And Mordecai is saying, Esther, you've got to realize where you are. You've got to realize the importance of being in the palace. And some of you are like Esther. You're amazed that you've managed to endure as a Christian where you are. You feel like you're barely hanging on. You're on the inside. And yet, God will use you there. Because people on the outside the palace need your help. You have access, Christians. You have access to people and places that I never, ever would as a pastor. Well, the preacher's gonna do it. God uses ordinary Christians in ordinary places to do extraordinary, amazing, fabulous work for the gospel. You've come to the kingdom. You've come to your royal position for such a time as this. So for Esther, this moment, chapter 4, middle of chapter 4, this is a defining moment in her life. By the way, you'll probably never know when your defining moment will arrive. She didn't know this was going to happen. It's been argued that life can be broken down into a series of defining moments, decisions that we make. And we see from the Council of Mordecai that God places us in positions to make those choices to be used by him. I come to these times, I come to these places, God makes a choice, am I going to be used by him? Esther was brought to a defining moment in her life largely by circumstances that were beyond her control, and she's in something of an identity crisis. Leland Ryken points out that Esther is the only person in this story with two names. She has her Hebrew name, Hadassah, and she has her Persian name, Esther. She was raised as a Jew, but she was thrust into the king's court where she acts like a pagan. And up to this point in the story, Esther is pretending to be a Gentile, a pagan. And she's controlled by circumstances. She's been passive. She's not initiating action, but she's following the path of least resistance. She's going with the flow. Then comes this totally unexpected, totally out of the blue to her, this defining moment when she must take responsibility for the life that God has given her by identifying herself with the people of God. And if Esther chooses to remain silent and continue living as a pagan, God's going to find some other way to keep his covenant promises to Israel and to deliver his people. God will find some other way to do it. Deliverance will arise from another place. But God has placed her in this time, the city of Susa, even in the bedroom of Xerxes, so that when that moment comes, he can fulfill his promises through her. Are you ready for God to bring those defining moments into your life? God uses people on the inside. Number two. Living on the inside is high risk. Now, what's that high danger? What's the danger for Esther? Well, verse 11, she gives an explanation. It's really not evasion. She's not trying to scoot away. She's just explaining to Mordecai. She just can't rush into the throne room and ask to talk like a normal wife. The correct protocol was to request an audience with the king through his messengers and then to wait for an invitation. Only 7 men were allowed to enter the king's presence unannounced. Evil Haman was one of them. He had access to the king, but Esther did not. And if she approached Xerxes, she would be taking her life in her hands, because the king was completely sheltered. He was protected from bad news. He was protected from interruptions. So Esther's saying, in essence, I got here because my hubby's last wife was too bold. You're asking me to throw away everything. Everything. How can you do that? Maybe this 30 days that I haven't been invited in to my husband is a sign that I'm out of favor. He has a new favorite wife, maybe. And Mordecai says, of course, I know exactly what I'm asking you. So this is the high point of the book. And it shows us that the palace won't protect you from death. You may be on the inside, Esther. You may be right there in that most sacred of places in Susa, but it's not going to keep you from dying when this comes down. Your silence, Esther, won't prevent deliverance from another source. When Mordecai says this, from another place, obviously he's alluding to God. And we talked a little bit about that last Sunday, why God is not named in this book. Whether he uses you or not, God's going to find a way to deliver his people. And Mordecai is talking about the providence of God, though God's name is not mentioned. Mordecai knew God's promises. Mordecai had faith that the people of Israel could not be eliminated because God has promised it. Now, how did Mordecai know that? Because God had made a covenant with his people through Abraham 1,500 years before. Remember, the enemy has been trying to eliminate the Jews since Abraham for 1,500 years. And every time, God always comes through. So Mordecai is saying, it's risky. It's risky, Esther. But it's a risk that must be taken. Here's what Mordecai is saying. If you don't risk losing the palace, you're going to lose everything. Don't just think that because you're in the king's house that you alone of all the Jews will escape. For if you remain silent at this time, God will rescue all of us, but you and your father's family will perish. It's brutal. He's blunt, but she needs to hear this. I wonder, are you willing to risk your position? Are you willing to take a chance, so to speak, with all that you've worked so hard to get to, with all that God has blessed you? Are you willing to say, for God and the kingdom, I will risk it all? Then Mordecai says, and who knows but that you have come to a royal position, come to the kingdom for such a time as this. Living on the inside is high risk. Number 3, God puts you on the inside for a reason. Verse 14 is an incredible verse. And it really is the highlight of this whole book of Esther. It's amazing. And that word, come, and who knows whether you have not come to the kingdom for such a time as this. That word, come, is in the passive verb form. Now, grammar is important here. That means this could be translated, who knows if you were not brought to the kingdom, you were not made queen, because of this. It's what happened to Esther. So he's saying, you got here by grace, Esther. Who knows? But God made you queen for such a time as this. Your beauty wasn't something you earned. It was given to you. The door of opportunity wasn't something you produced. Now, Esther could easily have said, wait a minute. Wait a minute, Uncle Mordecai. Do you have any idea how hard I worked? 12 months in beauty school? I worked so hard. And Mordecai says, you worked with beauty and with talents and with gifts that you did not earn, Esther. They were given to you. You went through doors of opportunity that you didn't produce. They just opened for you. You see, Esther, there's a purpose and a plan for everything that God does with you. God has a plan which you will accomplish, and God uses people to accomplish his plan. One ordinary person can make a difference, because in the normal course of events, God uses individuals like you and I to effect change. God chose Esther on the basis of her beauty. God chose her on the basis of grace, and God accomplishes his plan even when people don't cooperate. He's going to do it. He's going to do it on his own schedule. Think about this. Xerxes was in a third year of his reign before Vashti was gone. Then 4 more years to Esther. This was the 12th year of Haman. And the crisis was almost a year more. Wow. All of this takes all kinds of time. God's not in a hurry. And the change in Esther's heart begins here. She says, fast for me. Then I'll lay my life on the line. Isn't that incredible? The way most Christians approach the book of Esther is to say, now here's this good-looking woman who gets a trophy husband, and she sets a good example by being brave and asking for freedom. And if I am brave and if I am forthright with my faith, I too will be blessed by God. But the problem of looking at the book of Esther that way is it doesn't work. It can't work. Why? But for 2 reasons. Number 1, Esther is not a good example in much of this book. She's a mess. Second reason, it's an impossible example to keep. If you think that what Esther is teaching you is to be brave and to follow Esther's moral example and be more outspoken and to identify as a Christian and to rescue people, I need to be more outspoken, I need to tell more people. If you just leave here this morning, I'm determined to do that, it will crush you. It'll turn you into a Pharisee. You'll have rules, you'll have morality, but you won't have the power to keep it up. Maybe for a little while you'll become more outspoken, you'll become a principled person, but we really haven't changed on the inside. You've become more self-righteous. You're being self-righteously more outspoken, self-righteously more overt. Maybe you carry now, you're going to start identifying as a Christian, you're carrying a big fat Bible to work, to school. But if you look at Esther as an example, it's all pharisaical. Because an example will just crush you. You can't keep it up. Esther is not an example. She's a signpost. She's a pointer. Esther is showing us something. She's showing us someone. Keep this in mind. We were all created by God in his image and likeness. God gave us everything we have. He sustains our life every second. He keeps our heart beating every second. Therefore, we owe him everything. We don't live that way. We don't live like we owe him everything. We live as if everything we have is ours and we to use as we see fit, and everything is for our own interest and for our own happiness. And as a result, we end up violating our relationship with God. And you see, all the religions of the world disagree on the details, but they all agree on one thing. That is that there's a gap between us and God. What are we going to do about that? This gap between humanity and God. Now, all the other religions of the world say you get saved by example. Here's what you do to get saved. You be good, you follow the leader, you behave, you follow the rules. But Christianity says something radically different. Esther isn't an example. She's a pointer. Let me show you what I mean. How people on the inside become truly great. Esther's not an example. She's a pointer. How did Esther become truly great? By identification. She identified with her people. She didn't take the safe way. Her people were condemned, so she identified with them. She came under condemnation. She risked her life, and she said, if I perish, I perish. Because she identified, then she could do mission. She went before the throne of power. She went before Xerxes. And because she received favor there, her favor was imputed to her people. And that took radical obedience. She gave everything she had to rescue her people. She risked everything. She held nothing back. Now, does that sound familiar? This is pointing to the gospel. Jesus Christ lived in the ultimate palace. He was the Son of God. He had ultimate beauty. He had ultimate glory. He left it, and no one had to wheedle. Nobody had to cajole him to leave. He left it. Nobody had to make arguments. Nobody had to put pressure on him. Philippians chapter 2 said he had equality with the Father, and he didn't hold on to it. He emptied himself. He came down. He identified with us, and he took on our condemnation. And he didn't do this at the risk of his own life. He did it at the cost of his life. Jesus Christ didn't say, if I perish, I perish. He said, when I perish, I'll perish. And he went to the cross, and there he died, and he was crushed, and he made atonement for our sins. So now the Bible stands. He says he stands before the Father at the throne of the universe, and the favor that he has procured is ours. If we believe in him, it's ours. It's the very same thing. Jesus Christ isn't just an example. He's a substitute. And this is the language of radical obedience. If I perish, I perish. It means I'm going to follow God no matter what. I don't care. Not, well, I'm going to try God out, and if it really kind of helps me out. No. This is unconditional. It's radical. It's a gospel-powered strategy for life. Take your hands off your life. Put your life in his hands. One more thing. Karen Jobes, who wrote a commentary on the book of Esther, says that there are 14 times in the book of Esther that she is called queen. 14 times. 13 of those happen after she says, if I perish, I perish. Esther, it's not just called Esther, but she's called Queen Esther 13 times after she says, if I perish, I perish. She becomes a person of greatness, not by trying to be a person of greatness. You will become a person of greatness, not by trying to be a person of greatness, but by serving the one who says, for your sake, Father, thy will be done. Who knows? Perhaps you've come to your present situation for such a time as this. Karen Jobes. Perhaps, like Esther, you have been brought to this moment in your life by circumstances over which you have no control, combined with the flawed decisions you made along the way. Perhaps instead of living for God, you so concealed your Christian faith that no one would even identify you as a Christian. Then suddenly, you find yourself facing calamity, either in the circumstances of your life with others or just within your own inner emotional world. Regardless of the straits you find yourself in, turn to the Lord. Rend your hearts, not your garment. Fast, weep, and mourn. Return to the Lord your God. His purposes are greater than yours. And who knows? Perhaps you have come to your present situation for such a time as this. I think J.D. Greer nails it. J.D. Greer looks at what we are called to do. He looks at my present situation in the inside. He says, do what you do well for the glory of God. Do it somewhere strategic for the mission of God. Does that describe you? that's your life calling, and I'm going to go out and say, if I perish, I perish, because I am following the King of Kings who substituted himself for me. I am following the King of Kings who identified with me and interceded for me and who took all my condemnation. I am following the one who loved me at the cost of his own life. Not all of you are going to be pastors. The vast majority of you are not. But you all have strategic access to individuals. You all have circumstances that you can use for his glory. Will you be used by him? Let's stand together. Father, open our eyes to see your power and your kingdom and your glory. Open our eyes to see the place in which you have put us. May we make ourselves available to be used on the inside in the place that you have placed us for such a time as this. In Christ's name.